couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new movies and TV series Infinity Pool, Shotgun Wedding, Poker Face, Shrinking, and Teen Wolf the Movie. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Velma. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is the Razzie nominations came out this week. That's for the 43rd annual Golden Raspberry Awards. And I've kind of had a love-hate relationship with them, mainly because I love the idea of doing a Worst of the Year contest or a list or awards. I love that. I think that's great because I think we should honor the garbage as much as we should honor the good movies. But I think sometimes they get overly cheeky and stupid. Like some of their nominations, they have like the worst on-screen couple and they have stupid things. Like on this one, they've got for one of the worst screen couples, they've got Tom Hanks in his latex-laden face and ludicrous accent for Elvis. That's not a couple. And they try and get too cheeky and clever, and the writing is not very good. And that's kind of what upsets me most about the Razzies. But I know that in this day and age, people are above that. I'm like, oh, I don't want to add to the discourse. No, I say add to the discourse for bad stuff. And for the worst picture, they've got Blonde, Disney's Pinocchio, which is that remake that was on Disney Plus, Good Morning, which nobody's heard about. It made like $10,000 in the theater or less. That's something by Machine Gun Kelly. It got a whole bunch of nominations. The King's Daughter, which I don't even think people remember, and Morbius, which those are perfectly deserving. But they really stepped in a bear trap because one of the actresses that they nominated for Worst Actress, the running is Bryce Dallas Howard for Jurassic World Dominion. On their website, it says Jurassic Park. Again, they don't have great editors over at the Razzies. Diane Keaton for Mac and Rita, Kayla Scodelario for The King's Daughter, and Alicia Silverstone for The Requiem. Now, if you notice, those are only four. Usually they have five because they took off the list because of blowback. They had Ryan Kira Armstrong for Firestarter, you know, the Firestarter remake that came out this summer, and rightfully so got raked over the coals for this. And here's why. This is a girl. This girl's 12. I think she was 11 when she shot the movie. And people are like, come on, really? Are you going to take the knives out for an 11-year-old? And also, here's the thing. Firestarter was a terrible movie, but it wasn't her fault. There's worse performances out there than hers. She was fine in it. She was not the problem with the movie, let me tell you. And so they got people yelling at them online, and there was a lot of complaints, and so they actually just took it off the list, which is good for them. I mean, they owned up to it. They didn't try to explain it away, and they just said, all right, we're taking it off the list. They didn't replace it with something else, and that's fine. That's their prerogative. There have been two other times the Razzies have nominated a child, meaning somebody under 18. One of them was for Jake Lloyd in 1999 for, obviously, episode one. And the other one was Macaulay Culkin for, like, Richie Rich and The Pagemaster. He came out with a whole bunch of stuff as his career was winding down as a kid, and they were all kind of crap. And then I was reading this thing about going, look at the impact that had on these kids. Look at what it did to Macaulay Culkin. Look what it did to Jake Lloyd. And I'm like, okay. Now, I don't think the Razzies should go out there nominating children anymore, but let's not blame the Razzies for Jake Lloyd's public meltdown. That guy's got some problems. And it wasn't just the Razzies. Everybody was dumping on Jake Lloyd in the late 90s, early 2000s. And people still do. I think that's more of a Lucas problem. I mean, Jake Lloyd didn't do a great job, and he had some really flat and wooded delivery, and he's not a good actor in that movie. But I don't blame the Razzie Awards for all the problems that he had from it. That's just general venom out there from Star Wars fans and people who like to make fun of people. Of course, this was before the internet really got sophisticated, and now people are like above it, which there weren't at the time. And the thing with the Macaulay Culkin, again, let's not blame the Razzies in that little run in 1995 for how his career went kind of crazy and how his life seems to be a little unstable. Although I'll have to say, as rocky as his public life has been, he's a lot more put together than most adult child stars. Along with the Razzies came the Oscar nominations this week, and those are, you know, there's always people who complain about what didn't get nominated and what should have been nominated, and I do think it's great that Everything, Everywhere, All at Once got the most nominations. It ended up getting 11 nominations, which is great for some just really weird, obscure, independent film that has blown up, and it did well. If you remember back in the summer when it came out, it did quite well. And then the German language film, All Quiet on the Western Front from Netflix, that got something like 9 nominations. It tied with The Banshees of Inisherin, which you knew was going to get a lot, but All Quiet on the Western Front kind of came out of nowhere. Nobody was expecting that. But the other one that people have been complaining about is in the lead actress category, there's no black women, because you had Viola Davis for The Woman King and Danielle Detweiler for Till that were considered shoo-ins. And then Andrea Riseborough came in and got a nomination for To Leslie. And of course, that's upsetting everybody, but you can't use the hashtag #OscarsSoWhite anymore because of all the Asians that are listed in this, because they're all tied to Everything Everywhere All at Once and also for The Whale. But let's also not forget that Ana de Armas, who was for Blonde, she's Cuban. So, I mean, she's not white technically. I mean, if you want to use whatever yardstick you want on it. So, and then of course people are complaining that no women got nominated for the director. And I'm like, there's 5 slots. It's really, you know, and there's, okay, yeah, Sarah Pauly maybe, but it just, that's how the voting came out. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to preview is for Scream 6, which is coming to theaters on March 10th.
I had this secret. There's a darkness inside of me. It followed me here. And it's going to keep coming for us.
This isn't like any other ghost face.
What is this place?
A shrine.
We've got to lure him in.
We execute him.
Hello.
Let's play a game.
You know you're like the 10th guy to try this, right?
I'm all for the Scream franchise. I think this is one of the few franchises that has been relatively strong throughout its many years and many reboots. Because if you recall, Scream 4 was kind of a reboot, and Scream 5 was kind of a reboot. The weakest one of the batch was Scream 3. And that was directed by Wes Craven. Of course, he's passed away now. The people who made Scream 6 have to thank themselves for not killing off Jenna Ortega's character in the previous movie, because she's huge now because of Wednesday. And this looks like it's still going to be fun. It looks like it's continuing to play with the franchise, so I'm curious to see where this one goes. The next one I want to talk about is Dungeons & Dragons Honor Among Thieves, which is coming to theaters on March 31st.
We're thieves, but we help the wrong person steal the wrong thing and unleash the greatest evil the world has ever known.
The Red Wizards created an army of the undead.
Sounds lovely.
Quite the opposite.
I know, I was being ironic.
I find irony is a blade that cuts he who wields it most especially.
You're not a lot of fun, are you?
We're gonna need a team.
Aren't you sick of failing?
We could die.
There's worse things than dying.
Yep, they dropped another trailer for this one. You know what? This looks fun. And I know some people have complained that it's a little bit cheeky and goofy, but you know, I had a friend who is a gamer who does a lot of role-playing games, and he posted on Facebook that he's okay with it getting a little goofy, because you know what? The best times when you're playing Dungeons and Dragons is when it gets goofy. Nobody, if you're in a group and you're playing Dungeons and Dragons and the people are overly serious, that's no fun. Nobody wants to play with that guy. People want to sit around and goof around and be silly, and you have some absurd things happen, and you have the interaction between people. That's what role-playing games are all about. So we don't need a super serious Dungeons and Dragons movie. So, you know, this one looks like it might be kind of fun. And it doesn't look nearly as awful as that original one they did, 25, 30 years ago. Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, we're going to be talking about Shotgun Wedding and Shrinking. Breaking news, Manscaped now sells beard products. That's right, they are once again revolutionizing men's grooming with the brand new Beard Hedger Pro Kit. From a beard trim to a fresh shave, the technology behind the Beard Hedger Pro Kit allows you to shape your signature beard look. Now you can finally use Manscaped products to make your drapes match your carpet by going to manscaped.com and using code FATGUYS for 20% off and free shipping. One of the things about using Manscaped is, as great as it is for trimming your underbits, there may be some things you want to do north of the equator. And Manscaped has listened to that, and now they're launching their Beard Hedger Pro Kit. This thing gives you 20 hair cutting lengths, it's got a titanium-coated blade, and it's waterproof so you can shave in the shower so you can avoid getting that hair all over the sink. The titanium-coated blade is tough, and if you get the whole kit, you also get the beard shampoo and conditioner, you get the beard oil, you get the beard balm, and you also get a couple really cool gifts, a beard brush that moves so smoothly, a comb that has great teeth that doesn't snag, and some scissors to do that very, very fine work. So now's your chance to make the top half look as shiny and new as the bottom half. So get 20% off and free shipping with the code FATGUYS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use code FATGUYS. Manscaped Beard Hedger. One stroke, one guard, 20 lengths. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about Shotgun Wedding. This is coming to Prime. Jennifer Lopez and Josh Duhamel star as a couple on a destination wedding whose guests are held hostage by pirates.
Honey, maybe we should just call it a night.
You go ahead. I gotta finish these centerpieces and rearrange the seating chart.
So much better than the rest of us.
Something doesn't feel right.
There are pirates outside, and they took everybody hostage.
Not once did I wonder if I'd be walking handcuffed through the jungle with a live grenade.
There's sort of this new brand of rom-com, and it's not that this has never been done before. I mean, this goes all the way back to stuff like Romancing the Stone in the 80s. But in the last 10 years or so, there have been these cross-genre rom-coms, not just your very typical girl in the city meets a guy and then they have a whirlwind romance. They play around with either action or horror or some other type of genre. A great example of that is last year you had The Lost City with Channing Tatum and Sandra Bullock. Did extremely well, had great legs throughout the spring, and made quite a bit of money, and that was a success. And so I think they're trying to, I mean, this was out put into production long before The Lost City was, but now those rom-coms, you got to offer something more than just a standard romance in the city and to get people, ironically, to get people to theaters, even though this is going straight to Prime. First of all, Jennifer Lopez, look, I've not got nothing against her personally, but I once said about 10 years ago, if you see Jennifer Lopez coming soon in a movie in January, you know it's going to be terrible. And that's played out with stuff like, what was that movie with her and Jason Statham, Parker? That thing was awful. Did you know that movie, The Boy Next Door? That thing was bonkers. But Shotgun Wedding, it was originally supposed to be Ryan Reynolds in it, and then they got Josh Duhamel. I think Jennifer Lopez has been attached for a long time. The biggest problem I have with this movie is the same thing I had with her movie last year, Marry Me. Putting her in a rom-com like this, she's 53, and there's nothing wrong with it. She looks fantastic for 53, but she's 53. She should be the mother of the bride in a movie like this. It's weird to see, oh, hey, daddy, you know, Cheech Marin plays her father. Everybody, I will say, is pretty much appropriately aged, although, like, Josh Duhamel is 51, and Jennifer Coolidge plays his mom, and she's only about 10 years older than him. But for the most part, they're at least all age appropriate, except for what they're doing. I mean, yeah, people get married in their 50s, but Josh Duhamel's character plays, he's a baseball player. And then they even make a joke. They try to edge him down. They say, oh, you're 40. And I'm like, well, still, how many people are playing baseball at the age of 40, hoping to go into the major leagues? Anyways, that's nitpicking. This movie's fine. Jennifer Lopez and Josh Duhamel, they have enough chemistry to make it work, but it's not great. It's not as good as Channing Tatum and Sandra Bullock in The Lost City. But, I mean, it's kind of fun. It's whimsical enough. It's R-rated, so it has a little bit of violence, and it has some language in it. which is fine. That doesn't offend me. It's just I always, and I said this when I talked about the movie Plane, I get worried about a movie that's got an R rating and then they got Pirates and Mercenaries that I think it's going to get too brutal. But this isn't. It's a rom-com. It's meant to be silly. It's like Die Hard on the beach, only they have no idea how to actually die hard. But it's fine. You know, it's not terrible, but still imperfect. This action-oriented rom-com should connect with its intended audience. I think it will. So, you know, because it's no more than it needs to be, I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Shrinking. This is a TV series on Apple TV+. Jason Segel stars as a recently widowed therapist who tries unorthodox strategies on his patients and himself.
I'm worried about you, kid. I mean, grieving here. You've been numbing.
Stop. You're doing sad face.
This is just face. I have resting dead wife face.
I think I can help people if I get my hands a little bit dirtier. We know what they should do. Don't you ever want to just shake them?
Well, we don't shake them.
Sounds so unethical.
You're just going to burn down your career and take me with you.
Coin flip?
Get out of here.
The biggest notable things about this TV series are Bill Lawrence, who he originally did Scrubs and like Spin City, but he's well known now for doing Ted Lasso, which is a wonderful show. So he's known for that and he gets a lot of accolades for that. And he has, he's the one who's put this together. The other thing is it's got Harrison Ford in it, which is weird because I don't know if he's ever been in a TV series before, even though this is streaming and it's more kind of like a limited series. But I know a lot of people have been sort of raised eyebrows at the fact, okay, Harrison Ford's in this. And the thing is, it's got a lot of great people involved. Like I said, Bill Lawrence is very good at what he does. Jason Segel's very funny. Harrison Ford does a great job in this. He's sort of the, well, big surprise, he's the grumpy old man in this one. But he's a guy who is like the main therapist where Jason Segel works. And the whole thing is his wife died like a year ago and he's not gotten over it and he's still processing his grief and he's got a teenage daughter that he's starting to get estranged from because of that. Look, I understand the need to have a positive outlook on mental health and an understanding of how mental health works. And the fact that getting therapy and going to the doctor and getting medicine is nothing to be ashamed of, and the stigma needs to be lifted from that. I talked about that last week with the movie The Sun. My problem with Shrinking is I have no patience for the characters. First of all of them are damaged, and I understand that's the whole point of a show like this, is everyone's got their damage. Everybody's had trauma in their life in some way, shape, or form. True. But the trauma of losing your wife while you've got a teenage daughter, that's hugely impactful. That's a lot bigger than just having a dad who yelled at you a little too much. You know what I mean? And I know everybody has their own trauma and everybody deals with it differently. What I don't like to see in movies is people who are inappropriately dealing with their trauma and hurting other people as a result. I mean, I understand there are some people who have real trouble getting their crap together. You have all my sympathy as long as you're not hurting other people, especially people in your life. It reminds me a little bit of that show. I think it's called Afterlife. It's with Ricky Gervais. It's on Netflix. I quit in the middle of that show because, first of all, it comes with Ricky Gervais in this obnoxiously atheistic perspective of like, you know, but there's nothing out there. Rah, 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 rah. And his wife dies, same sort of premise. And he's just a jerk to everybody because who cares? What doesn't matter because life has no meaning. And I'm just like, I just got tired of watching that because I'm just like, it's exhausting watching somebody be an a-hole the whole time. And that's what's happening in Shrinking. I've watched several episodes and I'm just like, oh my God. I know having a spouse die is a huge impact, but you've got a child. And the damage you're doing to your child is wrong. And get your stuff together, for crying out loud. And everyone's just like, he'll recover when he recovers. Oh, well. And I'm like, well, he's going to ruin this girl and make her life awful. And there's no excuse for that. Take your time to grieve. Take your time to process. But sometimes somebody needs to kick you in the tail to get you going. And nobody's doing that. And that's what's so frustrating. And then everybody's got this massive trauma in their life. And I'm just like, I do not want to watch a show about trauma. I get it. Fine. More understanding and destigmatize mental health. But I don't want to watch everybody just throwing up all of their awful emotions on screen, even if it's funny. So, I mean, its heart's in the right place, but it browbeats the viewers with such ubiquitously traumatized characters that they become insufferable. I'm going to have to say, Shrinking kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Infinity Pool and Poker Face. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Infinity Pool. On a resort vacation, a couple gets mixed up in an unexpected murder charge, then are offered a bizarre solution.
Here, the punishment for any crime committed is death.
But for a significant sum, we'll build a double to send in for your execution.
Maybe think of it as a gift. It's like a new skin working into place.
You know, James, do you worry they got the wrong man?
This is directed by Brandon Cronenberg, who is pretty obviously the son of David Cronenberg. If you don't know who David Cronenberg is, I mean, he still is out there. He directed Crimes of the Future last year, and he actually shows up, weirdly enough, on Star Trek Discovery. But he was well known in the 70s and 80s for doing very extreme, very twisted, surreal horror and science fiction type movies. He did movies like Scanners and Shivers and Rabid. And then, of course, he's best known, probably most recognizably known for doing something like The Fly with Jeff Goldblum and stuff like The Dead Zone, which is probably his most down-to-earth movie that he did before he kind of started trying to do some down-to-earth movies. And I love David Cronenberg. Now, Brandon Cronenberg did the movie Possessor, which came out, I think, 2 years ago, which was an interesting movie. I liked Possessor for what it was. And his stuff, it's different than his father's. His movies are exactly what you'd expect from somebody who grew up with David Cronenberg as a dad. You know. But Brandon Cronenberg, he's not as overtly bizarre as his father. He eases into this stuff. And like you think you're just watching a relatively typical story, and then it takes a weird, weird turn. Whereas usually David Cronenberg stuff's weird from frame one. And I kind of like that in Brendan Cronenberg stuff because it sneaks up on you. And the whole point of Infinity Pool is it's hard to decode. There's a lot of weird stuff going on because it just starts out as these people on vacation and then they get this murder charge and then suddenly there's this thing about making duplicates so they don't have to get executed. And I mean, almost to a Terry Gilliam bizarreness, but not with the cuteness of Terry Gilliam, but there's a real grounding in Cronenberg's work that doesn't make it feel like it's completely out there. And there have been a whole list of movies in the last couple of years. I think this is probably driven by COVID and needing to have sort of like restricted shooting. There's been a whole sequence of movies about people on a resort or something. It's like a getaway where they're dealing with themes of affluence and privilege and wealth disparity and the darkness of the human condition and the treatment of each other. I mean, everything from The Menu and The Glass Onion, even something like Shotgun Wedding or Plane, which aren't horror films, but they all kind of exist in this sort of tropical zone. So it falls in line with it, but this is even weirder than that. It really goes off the rails, but still is grounded. I'm going to say, this is not for everybody. Not even close to being for everybody. This is going to polarize people. And to people out there who are like, oh, I heard Kevin talking on the radio, and he said it was a pretty good movie. You gotta like the art house films to enjoy this. You don't have to like My Dinner with Andre necessarily, because that's not what this is, but you have to appreciate the surreal art house films. You know, you have to have been somebody who, you know, maybe you went to go see Beyond the Black Rainbow, you know, something like that. Some of these very weird, strange films that have been put in the theaters, but usually don't play in the big multiplexes. And that's exactly what Infinity Pool is. Now, the other thing is none of the characters are likable at all. They're all horrible people. And that's kind of the point. because it's this tragic egotism that invades everybody. And it examines who you are on vacation versus who you are when you go back home. And it examines the desire to break from the norm and do something daring, do something wrong, and the constant, you know, need to continue that and to get that next high. There's a lot that it's dealing with in this, and you're not going to decode it in the first watch. I watched it, and I tell you, it stuck with me. And that's rare for a movie to just kind of just stick in my brain, and I started to dream about it, and I was thinking about it the next day. So that takes a lot for a movie to do that to me without being just overtly violent and having some scene that's disturbing. This thing is just creepy and weird, but I really did enjoy it. But it is not for everybody. I mean, this is twisted and unpleasant. It's not for everybody, but it offers an unrelenting look at the dark side of humanity. I'm going to say Infinity Pool rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Poker Face. Natasha Lyonne stars as a woman who can always tell if someone's lying, and she helps random people on the road to get justice.
What's it like? Always knowing the truth.
There's nothing mystical about it. I could just tell.
When anyone is lying.
Yeah. I know what you did, you psycho.
You're gonna find Charlie Kill, and you're gonna bring it to me.
You live on the road, right?
What's it like? Leave everything behind. Start fresh.
I got wolves on my fender. Oh, I gotta keep moving. Holy, holy. It wasn't an accident. I think there's been a murder.
This is on Peacock. It's a series, and it is done by Rian Johnson. He created it, and he directs the first couple episodes of it and writes them. And then they have other writers and directors come on after they sort of set the template up. Now, first of all, I have grown very fond of Natasha Lyonne after seeing her in Russian Doll and then seeing her in this. I think she's really galvanized herself as a character to herself, and I love seeing her in these performances. And she's kind of the same kind of character she is in Russian Doll, only she's not in a time loop. But she does have that little power and that ability. It's not really a power. It's just she picks up on all the signs and she can just tell. She has an instinctive behavior. And there's the first episode, which sets up the story that sets her on the run. And they have different notable guest stars, like big names that show up in different things. Now, Rian Johnson, a lot of the stuff he does, he loves to pick a convention and make something in that convention and then turn it on its ear, which sometimes works really, really well, which I thought he did with Glass Onion and Knives Out to a degree. Or even, you know, something like Brick. I'm not a huge fan of Brick, but he basically took a film noir story and set it in a modern high school. So I can appreciate what he does. But when he does something like that to the Star Wars franchise, that's when I'm like, okay, back off, Johnson. But I really enjoyed Glass Onion. I liked Knives Out, and I really liked Poker Face. A lot of it has to do with Natasha Lyonne, but she's given some great material. And there was a template for shows, and younger viewers don't know this, but I'm talking about like the 80s and before. You had tons of shows where there would be somebody who would, a lot of times somebody either on the run or who traveled, and they would just run across different people along the way and help them out. The Fall Guy was a great example of that, although it always was based in L.A. Or something like The Incredible Hulk. The Incredible Hulk's another great example of that. It was David Banner going from town to town, helping people, and then hulking out and saving the day. And that was a really big template. I mean, even stuff like BJ and the Bear. I remember talking last year, I talked about that Shazam TV series. This was a real common thing. The other thing he's basing this on are sort of like the mystery movie of the week, something like Columbo. Which was Columbo wandering in and helping people out. And Columbo was never a TV series. It was just like movies that they had for, you know, regularly on the, like, what was it? The NBC mystery movie or something like that. And so it has that throwback feel to it. The last show I remember that really played with that was Burn Notice. And he even name checks the show in the pilot. So, you know, he's definitely on that page. And I like it. That's a fun format because there's this ongoing thing of her being chased by a bad guy. And then it's her helping people out in each episode. It's well put together. They've got a neat little formula that they've set up, and they fit in that formula until they decide to break the formula, which we'll see if that happens. But yeah, I really enjoyed Poker Face. I think it's a fun throwback to that episodic television formula with clever writing and a fantastic lead. I can't stress enough how good Natasha Lyonne is in a series like this. This and Russian Doll, those have turned me into a huge fan. I will now watch anything she shows up in. So hopefully she doesn't do a Star Wars movie with Rian Johnson. Anyways, I'm going to have to say that Poker Face totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Teen Wolf, the movie, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Velma. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up with the movie reviews and talk about one that's actually on streaming. And that is Teen Wolf, the movie. The inhabitants of Beacon Hills, werewolf and human alike, face a new supernatural threat.
How do we know she's really Allison?
Who are you?
It's me. It's Scott.
Scott who?
Whoever or whatever is out there right now. It's not Allison.
We need everyone. There's more going on, and I think it's all connected.
The Nikitsune has come to play a new game.
You have to find her. And stop her. And help her remember who she was.
This is a reboot of the Teen Wolf series. It's a movie, obviously, because it's called Teen Wolf the Movie. And Teen Wolf, I think, I looked it up. It started like, oh gosh, about a dozen years ago, but it ran through like 2016, 2017. And then on Paramount Plus, they're bringing it back and they've got this Wolfpack series that this leads into. I'll be talking about those in later episodes, but this is bringing all the characters back. Now, here's the thing. First of all, I got to just take some issue with some naming. I would go as far to say Teen Wolf the movie was actually Teen Wolf from 1985, because that was Teen Wolf, and it was the first movie. Knowing full well that that was a reimagining of I Was a Teenage Werewolf from the 50s with Michael Landon in it. So I'm not instituting any sort of generational ownership over this. I'm just saying this is literally the third Teen Wolf movie, not counting sequels. Because you could count Teen Wolf 2, or you can count Teenage Frankenstein, which was sort of similar to I Was a Teenage Werewolf, done by the same people. So first of all, Teen Wolf the movie, that's a ballsy title to have, but that's fine. And then they're really, really, really stretching the term teen. There's one teen in this movie, and he has trouble turning into a werewolf. So it's maybe teen not wolf? But also, I mean, everybody's in their 30s in this movie. Everybody, all of the characters. And some of them are starting to look a little long in the tooth, especially, and this is me not being sexist, but this is me saying the women, because when you start getting in your 30s and you're an actress in Hollywood, they tell you to get plastic surgery. And you can tell these girls have gotten some work done and you're just like, ooh, that just doesn't look right. And then they flash back to them when they were younger and they were in their 20s, you know, when they're doing the original show. And you're like, oh, yeah, you kind of, in order to try to stay younger, you made yourself look older. Weirdly enough, that's what happens with plastic surgery. And it's sad. But overall, I mean, it's okay. Look, this thing really relies on you knowing what went on in the original Teen Wolf series. I watched a couple seasons of it. I was really covering much more TV and DVDs covering that back about 10 years ago. I got to 2-3 seasons of it and I stopped watching, but they're like 6 seasons. So I had no idea what's going on in this. And I was kind of confused because I will say this, they don't really take too much time to explain the characters to anybody. They assume you know who everybody is because they're making this for the fans and they're hoping to reboot the series or a version of the series rather. They're doing that with the Wolfpack. But the other thing with this is it's on streaming. So it's on Paramount Plus. So it's not going on MTV, which is what the original series was on. And by putting it on streaming, there's no board of censors. So there's swearing in it. They drop quite a few F-bombs throughout and there's some nudity in there. There's a lot of butts in this movie. Lots of butts. Well, not a lot of butts, but a good amount of butts. Way more butts than you would have gotten on MTV. Did I say butts too many times? Anyways, you know, it's fine for what it is. As like I said, while stretching the teen concept quite thin, and it does run too long. I mean, it's like 2.5 hours and really could have been shorter. This reboot movie should please the original show's fans. I mean, that's who it's made for, and there's nothing wrong with that. For as much as everybody complains and whines about fan service, that's exactly what this kind of stuff is. That's exactly what streaming's turning into, which I'm fine with. What they do is they take a show that people loved, and then they say, if we can keep those 4 or 5 million people watching the show and staying on our service, that's a good chunk. And they do that with several shows, and before you know it, you got enough money to run a streaming service. And that's kind of how this stuff works. So I'm going to have to say Teen Wolf, the movie, while a little bit of it was lost on me because I didn't watch enough of the TV series, I'm going to still say it kind of rocks. It's a little silly, but, you know, all that, you know, it gets over the... You know, God bless those actors for keeping a straight face while they're growling like monsters in the show. So I'm going to have to say Teen Wolf kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on a show that's been on for a couple weeks, and that is Velma. It's on HBO Max, and it's not a kid's show. It's a Scooby-Doo related thing, but it's not for kids. I'm just warning you right now. Don't go like throwing it on and showing it to your kids, because they're going to come to you, or they won't. They'll just be like, yeah, it's fun, Mom, and continue to watch all the inappropriate stuff. This adult-oriented animation series reimagines the origin of Velma Dinkley as an Indian-American teen struggling to solve her mother's disappearance.
My name is Velma Dinkley, and I've decided to finally share the bone-chilling events that drove me to assemble the greatest team of spooky mystery solvers ever. This is my story, told my way. And it starts with a murder.
If I can't convince people I didn't kill Brenda, I'm going to be arrested.
You might have more success with this if you went in just a little less judgy.
Okay, Daphne, I'm the brains of this operation. You're just the looks.
We do make a good team, don't we?
The reason I chose this as a spotlight, normally this would have just passed by me and I wouldn't even have taken a second look, but it's kind of caused quite a hubbub because nobody likes this show. The people who think shows are too progressive and are too diverse and have too much stuff with racial humor and sexual jokes and too much with the LGBT stuff, those people won't like this because they're, you know, they've made Velma an Indian girl and they've made Shaggy a black kid, and there's not even Scooby-Doo in this one, and all the jokes are at the expense of white people. So those people aren't going to like this show. But all the progressives don't like it either. They have a bone to pick with Mindy Kaling, who plays Velma in this, and I think she's involved as an executive producer. They complain about her because you just have to Google search it. I'm not going to go into the whole explanation of why some progressives really can't stand Mindy Kaling, because it's sort of like that she's abandoned the diversity of, and she only uses it when it suits her. That's the best boiled down version of it. But also, it's very reductive at times. And part of the thing is, like, first of all, fine, make Velma an Indian American girl. I don't care. Make Norval Shaggy a black kid. I don't care. I don't have skin in that game. I mean, there'll still always be the original Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Cartoons from the 60s and 70s. But what I don't like about stuff like that is when they do that and then every single word out of their mouth is drawing attention to that. And it's just like, oh my God, there's more to life than just that. And every single joke is either about Velma being Indian or Velma being dorky or Fred being privileged, or Daphne being too pretty and she's got her privilege, and it just every single joke. And then it's about, you know, sexuality, and part of those, and these jokes, they're so old. I remember when I was a kid in the 80s joking about, oh, Velma's a lesbian, ha 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 ha, or oh yeah, Fred and Daphne are gonna go have sex, oh, you know that Scooby and Shaggy are all high. Yeah, everybody was joking about that since the 60s. There's a guy I know, he did a short film 20 years ago, and he thought it was brilliant because it was these guys talking about didn't you realize all the sexual innuendo and Scooby-Doo, and I'm like, this is a 30-year-old joke, and that's kind of what they do in this movie. It's just, these are they're old jokes. They're not even new. And in comedy, especially somebody like Mindy Kaling, whose feet are in comedy, she comes back. That's her roots. Don't tell old jokes. And the character, they do kind of betray the characters because there's a lovability to them. And fine, if you want to be iconoclastic, I get that. But it's poorly done. And you know, not to be that guy, but like every single joke is made at the expense of like Fred being a white guy. And they make it sound like, oh, white guys can do whatever they want to. Trust me, white guys cannot do whatever they want to. You know, just go down to a local sheriff's office sometime. You'll see plenty of white guys who are not put together and privileged. So, I mean, it's just this version of it is, I get what they're doing and they're trying to be cool, but it just, I mean, talk about something that just misses the mark and it's tone deaf for any audience. This leans annoyingly into the awkward racial and sexual humor while it's simultaneously just retreading ancient, overdone, and obvious Scooby-Doo jokes, and to the point that I don't even care what the characters do. I don't care if she solves her mom's disappearance at this point, because they all just are insufferable, awful idiots. So yeah, I'm going to have to say Velma sucks.
It sucks.
And that's it for this week. I got to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Knock at the Cabin and 84 Brady. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.